Welcome to Season 8, Episode 37 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's a windy Tuesday on the 17th of November, and we're going to discuss what's been going on in the community. And joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Hello, Mark. Alan.
Hello.
And Laura.
Hiya.
Hiya. How is everyone?
Windy.
Yeah. Try not to blow
How's
away.
How's everyone's internet holding up tonight?
No, I had chili for tea.
my internet seems fine. But then mine's in cables under the ground.
It looks like then we're about 50-50 as to whether this is going to work or not tonight.
Shall we once again apologise in advance for the
blustery conditions?
Yes. Let's do that. Whatever.
And it's time for some news.
Oh, Mark? Sorry. Valve launches a massive sale of SteamOS, that is to say Linux, titles to coincide with the launch of Steam Machines.
Ooh.
Yes.
Anything you haven't already got?
Quite a few, actually. Alien Isolation is probably the biggest title on there, and there's a few other sort of big name games like Shadow of Mordor and a few other sort of smaller independent games. Quite a few of them been around on Linux for a while. But yeah,
and I've noticed on the Steam client, when you're looking through the store, you get a little Windows logo for Windows compatible games, and you get a little OS X thing for Mac games.
Yes.
And Linux used to be a little penguin, but now it's a Steam logo.
Yeah. Interestingly, on my Steam box.
Is this the Steam Play thing?
Yes.
Steam Play.
Oh, no, that's as well.
Yeah.
No, Steam OS is what it means. Steam OS as in Linux.
But they've changed their
logo, so it doesn't say it's not a penguin. It's Steam OS.
But it says Steam Play beyond that, if it's got Steam Play support, whatever that is.
Oh, no, Steam Play. Yeah. Steam Play means that you buy it once and you get it on all platforms.
So how do I tell visually if a title is available on Linux or not?
If it has a Steam logo. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so if it's got the Steam pistons, then it's good.
Yes.
Or you just select the filter Linux and just trust that everything
The filter. The filter for Linux is called SteamOS Linux. In fact, on my Steam box, in big picture mode, by default, if you go to the store, it now only shows you stuff which you can play with your current setup, which is interesting. So it's, I think it's stuff which is controller. Or in fact, no, now I'm using a Steam controller. It's probably not just stuff which has controller support, but stuff specifically that runs on Linux, unless I tell it not to filter.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The first Linux ransomware program, Linux Encoder 1, has been cracked due to errors made by the creators when implementing the encryption algorithms. So there's now a free tool available from the antivirus firm Bitdefender that can decrypt the encrypted files that Linux Coder made due to the flaw in its design. That's cool.
So what does this do? Is it like the things that pop up from dodgy downloads that say, haha, we've encrypted all your files, you have to phone us and give us loads of money over Bitcoin or whatever, and we'll unlock that kind of thing.
That is exactly that sort of thing.
Yes.
And does it infect clients, like desktops?
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow.
But yes, they may.
We really have arrived.
You do have to run it as root. You do have to run it as root, however. So it's not like, you know, it's not quite like Windows where you click something and it silently happens in the background. You have to interact with this thing. And,
so you have to,
you know,
detach it from your email. UU decode it.
Yeah.
Run it under sudo. And then add yourself to the right group. And
you have to really want to have all your files encrypted.
and then if you've jumped all through those hoops, then you have to hope that the malware authors actually know how crypto works and haven't used a predictable key, a seed for the encryption.
One which is no less on the date of the files which have been encrypted.
Exactly. Indeed.
Cool. In hardware news, and also Ubuntu in the wild news, NVIDIA has launched the Jetson TX1 module. I don't think they're going into space with it. It sounds like it. It's designed to power artificial intelligence. It says AI in brackets there, for those who didn't know that, and provide machine learning in autonomous robots and drones to be central to advanced driver assistance systems and be an ideal solution for mobile medical imaging. Ooh, that sounds like a, what are they called? Not a tricorder. What's the thing that they
tricorder
used?
Tricorder is what you're after.
Was it a tricorder? Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
It's claimed that thanks to the powerful components, the Jetson TX1 is the first embedded computer module that can learn to recognize objects or interpret information. Mm-hmm. I call lies. Lots of things interpret information. I can write a bit of Perl interprets information. That's hogwash.
No, it interprets data.
Okay.
Still, information's data.
Yeah.
Quite a sophisticated board, though.
Yeah, it's got quite a lot of stuff on it. I'm not going to read out all the specs, but it's like a decent ARM A57 CPU, Maxwell GPU, 256 CUDA cores, 4K video encode and decode. So lots of I/O, lots and lots of ports and a capability to plug lots of different things into it. So, yeah, it's an interesting device.
Yeah,
I guess people are prototyping with it now with a view to it being embedded or something based on this being embedded like further on down the line.
I think most of their potential clients are in automotive and things like that.
Right. So like the Teslas of this world in the future
might have
this kind of stuff with Intel, the Google self-driving cars. I guess they're aiming for the next generations of those.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting seeing automated driver assistance systems as an actual non sort of derivative name for self-driving cars. I wondered, like, because when cars first came out, they were called horseless carriages by some people. I've been wondering what is the actual name that people are going to call self-driving cars once they stop calling them self-driving cars.
Well, we can exclusively reveal it's ADAS.
Or ADAS.
That's the act.
my friend Steve used to call them personal transport modules. That's what he used to call his car. I spent the weekend cleaning my personal transport module.
In the aviation industry, we refer to passengers as self-loading cargo.
Nice. Brilliant.
Anyway, moving on. The Raspberry Pi Foundation and Code Club have merged. So Code Club's a volunteer-led charitable organisation that runs after-school programmes to get children coding. And I think, Alan, you've done stuff with Code Club?
Yeah, we interviewed one of the original founders about two or three seasons ago. I did a bit of Code Club at a local school. It's interesting. It kind of makes sense because Raspberry Pi, they want to be in schools, they want to be in education, and Code Club, you know, are doing that kind of thing. So it's kind of a match made in heaven, I guess.
Is Raspberry Pi Foundation a separate sort of educational bit from the manufacturing side of it?
Oh, Martin knows all about this.
Well, I wouldn't say I know all about it, but I did have a conversation
More than with us.
Ben Nuttall at OgCamp about it.
Oh, right.
And there are, it's one organisation, and as far as I understand there's sort of two divisions of the organisation. And there's one part where they sell, sort of design, develop and sell their hardware, and then the money made from those hardware sales then get funneled into the educational mission of the Raspberry Pi Foundation. So there's one part of the company making the money, and then there's another part that's doing the whole education and outreach piece that spend the money.
Right.
And that's the basic sort of structure of the organization. So I guess that the making money bit will be funneling money into the Code Club now in order to help with that educational outreach sort of mission of the foundation.
Which sounds like an ideal setup to me.
It does.
It does, doesn't it?
Mark.
ISPs have told the Commons Select Committee that £117 million budgeted for the UK budgeted by the UK government will not cover the massive costs of collecting everyone's data. MPs have been warned that consumers' broadband bills will have to go up if the Investigatory Powers Bill is passed due to the massive cost of implementation. So this is, we've been whinging and moaning about this for several months now. Rumours of the government trying to ban encryption, with a new law. They've actually now published a draft of the bill. It's called the Draft Investigatory Powers Bill. And they're not saying that they're trying to ban encryption. They are saying that they want to compel ISPs to collect everybody's, web browsing history. They want to collect the websites you visit,
internet records.
They want to connect the sites you visit, but not the pages you visit, and the people you talk to, but not what you say. So all right then.
So somebody's put in a freedom of information request for Theresa May's phone records,
Internet records. Oh, brilliant.
And you know, ISPs are really, really good at keeping hold of this information and making sure it's secure.
Of course, because we haven't had any stories about ISPs losing customer data.
I feel confident.
Good.
Or any company at all.
I was going to say, you know, I seem to remember in the not too distant past an ISP losing all of their customers' email forever and for always. So asking ISPs to collect and retain this data is a pretty tall order, I think.
Yes.
However, Mark, I have to take issue. You said we've been whinging and moaning about this for a while. I think that frames it badly.
No, okay.
I think we've been protesting about this and arguing our case. I think whinging and moaning makes it sound like it's not something that we should be protesting. Mm.
Much better put, thank you.
But also, encouragingly, if you read the commentary from the ISPs themselves, it sounds like they do not want to do this because it is going to be a massive pain for them and a huge expense. Yeah. And an onus of responsibility that they really don't want.
Yeah.
In fact, I think one of the quotes was, is this feasible? One of the ISP sort of CTOs was asked, and they said, it's perfectly feasible with an infinite budget.
Yes. Well, that's the thing, what you say, is they're pushing all this responsibility onto them that, I mean, other companies have proven they can't do this, like keep stuff safe.
And The other thing is that if you've got all of this data, then you have to be able to do something with it. It seems to be that whenever there is some atrocity carried out, you know, in the world, and we're sitting here with the backdrop of Paris at the moment, quite often you hear that these people were known to the security services. And therefore, it's not about the data that's being collected, but the efficacy with which that data can actually be mined and interpreted. So I wonder whether having access to all of this data will actually help or change anything for the better anyway.
Mm. And they'll also become a massive target. The ISP will be a target for, well, look, I can get all this data about this politician or this celebrity, or I could get all this data about, you know, anyone in the public sphere and possibly embarrass them by showing their internet record.
That's an excellent point.
If you go to the Open Rights Group website, they've got some good summaries, because the bill is a 300-page document of legalese. They've got some good summaries of the highlights and lowlights of the bill, and advice for writing to your MP and telling them not to vote for it.
That's really useful, actually. I shall definitely be taking a look at that and drafting a response. And I suggest everyone in the UK who listens to this does the same.
Moving on. Martin, what's the next item?
We've had the first release candidate of QEMU 2.5, which, among other updates which are technically proficient and outstanding, it now supports VirtIO GPU 3D mode, which allows for guest virtual machines to have access to the 3D and OpenGL backend of the host's hardware.
Ooh,
so effectively 3D pass-through from the guest to the host. And this will work in conjunction with the new DRM driver that's in, this is not Digital Rights Management, it's Direct Rendering Manager, for Linux 4.4. And the work that's already been done in Mesa and Gallium 3D.
I always wondered why there was a load of DRM code in the Linux kernel.
Well, there is, of course, because, you know, some companies aren't.
But I mean, with regards to GPU drivers, I wasn't really sure what it was. But right, so direct
Don't
rendering
worry, Mark.
Mode. Right, thank
we
you.
We weren't laughing at you.
That's the way you get at the hardware for accelerated graphics.
Right. So this is super exciting because for a long I've been a lover of QEMU for a very long time. I remember giving a talk at Hampshire Linux User Group about 10 years ago about how fantastic QEMU was and how the guy who created it, Fabrice Bellard, is an absolute genius. He's the same guy who came up with FFmpeg as well and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I think he did a DOS virtual machine in JavaScript as well. He's just,
that was him.
He's a prolific open source contributor.
He is. He's amazing. And QEMU is one of those things that actually is baked into lots of different things. It's used a lot in virtual machines, and powers a lot of the different virtual machine technology underneath. There's QEMU underneath a lot of things like KVM, for example.
Isn't it used KVM. For like the Android emulator in the Android? What's it called? Development kit.
SDK.
SDK. Yeah.
So this is good news, and QEMU's always been the one that's been like the reliable stalwart. And it also has another thing that QEMU is good for is cross building, like creating an environment in which you can build for another architecture. So I use it when I'm building ARMHF binaries for a phone, but on an Intel laptop. It's really, really cool.
I use it for building Raspberry Pi 2 images on my Intel PC.
Sweet. Awesome. So, yes, congratulations to the QEMU team. Moving on, in an interview with The Intercept, Edward Snowden explains how to reclaim your privacy. Snowden describes some operational security practices he thinks everyone should adopt, why he thinks Tor is the most important privacy-enhancing technology project being used today, and why we should not live our lives as if we're electronically naked.
Ooh-ah. Mm.
So what does he suggest we should do? Disconnect from the internet and live in a cave, I think.
Actually, no, it's interesting because the journalist that interviewed him, whose name I've forgotten, I'm terribly sorry, turned up as if he was going to have some sort of, security assessment from Snowden. So he had his mobile phone turned off and inside a Faraday bag and, all sorts of measures. And apparently Edward Snowden put him at ease and said he could turn his phone on and he could contact his colleagues to arrange a meetup and all the rest of it. But Snowden goes on to talk about some utilities that are accessible and easy to use for smartphones to help ensure your privacy. So he talks about Redphone and Signal and a couple of other things, that anyone can install and aren't cumbersome to use, but then goes into deeper detail about if you're a future whistleblower, these are perhaps some of the countermeasures you want to consider. And if you're in an oppressive regime, these are perhaps some of the communications channels that you want to consider. And also, if you're using those communication channels, that you may actually be singling yourself out by using something unusual that stands out from the rest of the pack. So it's a very good read, and it's not...
That is worrying.
It's not sort of crazy complicated stuff. There is some technical detail in there, but it is something that everyone could do. And I like the piece about electronically naked because that was a new term that I've not come across. But that's basically talking about using HTTPS where you can, or using HTTPS everywhere to ensure that, all of your data is not just being spread around the internet liberally. And also he talks about information sharing. So when you're asked to provide answers to questions like what is the name of your first pet, that those are not actually useful bits of data other parties to hold about you, and that there are better ways to actually assert the identity of the person connecting to the service. So it's a very interesting read, and one that everyone can make sense of.
It's funny you should mention that. I have a friend who I recently said happy birthday to, and he said it's not my birthday, and I said, oh, Skype told me it was your birthday, and he gives so this is like Skype, a fake date of birth.
I've had that before.
So interesting. I think that's all we've got time for in the news. Time for for the community news and events. And the first up, it's a time for the regular community council election. So the members of the Ubuntu Community Council expired, not, you know, actually, I'm talking figuratively, expired from their roles, and the announcement...
I just had an image of Mark going, Expelliarmus!
I think that was probably a Harry Potter reference I don't get, but I laughed anyway. there were some nominations made, and... the ballots are now available for people to cast their vote. If you're an Ubuntu member, you can vote. If you're not, you can't. And then at the end of that, result will be new members on the community council.
Cool.
Yes, because we put out the call for nominations a few episodes back, didn't we? How many people are standing? Do you know?
Crikey, 11. As many as that. Right.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, seven positions. Three of whom are already members of the council.
Yes, three incumbents and new, fresh blood.
That's really good.
Mm.
That is good.
I was kind of worried when we announced it that given the recent hoo-has around the community council that there wouldn't be more volunteers.
You know, honestly, there are some who've stepped down. I know Liz has stepped down and she's absolutely exhausted through what's happened over the last couple of years. And, didn't want to stand again. I did ask her, because you have to be nominated and you have to agree to be nominated. And I pinged her on IRC and said, hey, love what you've done over the last couple of years. Could you please stay on? And she said, no, I think this is, the end for her on the council.
How long's your tenure when you
2 years.
A position on the council?
It's a 2 year stint. And then there's another election, some people, obviously, some people have been on the council for a few years, like Daniel Holback has been on there for probably longer than everyone except Mark Shuttleworth, who has a permanent position. It's only through virtue of the fact that people voted for him that he's on there. And the same for, some of the others. Yeah. So get voting if you're an Ubuntu member.
Cool.
The next event in our community news is Ubuntu Community Appreciation Day, which is on November the 20th every year. And this is open to everybody, whether they're a user, developer or non-developer, a non-developer contributor rather. And it's a way of saying thank you to people that make Ubuntu and the Ubuntu community. So it's just an opportunity to say thank you to someone who has done something that you appreciate in the Ubuntu world.
And get a card.
Yeah, it's like Valentine's Day, but for, nerds. I'm going to regret saying that. It's really nice. It's a nice way of just, having to think about, who over the last year you've interacted with, or someone who's fixed a bug for you, or someone who's mentored you to file a bug, or whatever it might be. Have a think and maybe write a blog post or send them a tweet or whatever you think, and just say thank you to them. Because, everyone appreciates a little bit of thanks now and then.
Yep. There's a Google code-in starting on December the 7th, and it's a contest introducing 13 to 17-year-old pre-university students to open-source software development. And Ubuntu is a mentoring organization this year.
It's like Google Summer of Code, and shorter, and younger people. And the tasks are all much smaller. Yes. So Google Summer of Code is very much, I'm going to implement this giant feature and spend, a month or more doing it. This is each organization that's a mentoring organization has a large number, like maybe 100 or more, smaller bite-sized paper cut style tasks that they want to get done, and puts them all up on the website as a list. And students can pick those up, do them, and get rewards. And there's a grand prize where Google, there's minor prizes like, t-shirts and all kinds of other merchandise and stuff. But there's a grand prize of getting a paid trip out to Mountain View in California, which is very nice. Yeah.
Nice.
So we're a mentoring organization and starts on December the 7th. So if you know any education establishment, schools or whatever, who might be interested in getting involved, then point them at codein.withgoogle.com.
Cool. Next up is Pi Wars, the Raspberry Pi Robotics Challenge Competition, Pi Wars is a challenge-based robotics competition which Raspberry Pi-controlled robots are created by teams and then compete in various challenges to earn points. Now, I'm imagining some sort of Craig Charles-hosted Robot Wars-style contest like they used to be on the BBC.
It's not not quite that level of carnage. No.
And do points mean
it's
prizes?
It's more obstacle courses and things
Martin,
of that
will
nature.
There be rotating knives? That's what I need to know.
Yes.
Well, maybe we should get the organisers on and have a chat to them.
That sounds like an excellent idea. But it's far too late, so we can't.
This is happening at the University of Cambridge Computer Laboratory on Sunday, the 5th of December, 2015, from 10 till 6.30 awesome. In the evening.
Following on the Pi theme, the 10th Eggum Raspberry Pi Jam is on the 17th of January in the new year. Bring along your game centres, your game controllers, your game either on screen or physical Raspberry Pi and show what you've got. Maybe you've got or made something amazing with your Christmas present. So it's all about gaming, gamification and that kind of stuff. So it's a nice theme. It's in Egham in Surrey, 17th of January, 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Cool.
Yeah, you've got a gamey thingy for the
I have. It's called a Pi-cade and it's awesome.
That's, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, well, that's not far from you, is it? You should take that along there because I want to have a go on it.
Actually, I just bought a Wi-Fi dongle. Someone tweeted that they'd bought a Wi-Fi dongle for their Raspberry Pi because mine's wired. And I got this from Pi Moroni, who are the same people who made the Pi K. And it's a Raspberry Pi compatible Wi-Fi dongle. But the nice thing is it's a little USB dongle. Which is the white plastic part that you normally hold onto as you put it in and out the port, has a Raspberry Pi logo on it, like etched into it. It's really quite nice. Yeah, so it's all branded and apparently works. I've not actually plugged it in yet because it's all the way over there on the other side of the room.
And later in January, the scale, it says 14.
Yeah, it's really confusing.
Is it the 14th scale?
I think it's the 14th, yes.
I guess so. Sounds about right. And that's at Pasadena Convention Center in California. And it's the largest community-run open source and free software conference in all of North America.
Wow.
And I think we met some of the Scale guys at Lug Radio Live USA.
Yeah, there's quite a large contingent of Linux-y people who go there. Like they say, it is the largest, you know. We're having an UbuCon, I think we mentioned last time, immediately before Scale.
Yes.
So some of us Ubuntu types will be out there for the days before Scale, and some of us might be staying on for Scale as well.
And lastly, the last event is FOSDEM 2016. FOSDEM is a free and non-commercial event organised by the community for the community, and the goal is to provide a free open source provide free and open source software developers and communities a place to meet. And this is happening in Brussels in Belgium from the 30th of January to the 31st of January 2016.
Yeah, busy old month in January, isn't it?
Who's going to go this year?
Yeah. I'd love to go. I've been to FOSDEM the past couple of years and it's brilliant, but unfortunately I've run out of leave to take from work this year, so I'm not going to be able to make it.
I think there might be an Ubuntu presence there. I think there might be a few of us going over. Well, there always are. There's always Ubuntu people there and Canonical people there, like mingling in with everyone else. Last year when I went, I was bumping against Canonical people all over the place. And it's a really, really good event if you're into free software. It's definitely worth going to. It's at the university and there's loads of rooms and loads of different tracks. It's very difficult to have a period of time throughout the day where there's not something interesting to go to.
Everyone seems to go there, like everyone I know from the open source community. I'm just sort of walking down a corridor trying to work out where I'm going next, and I'll suddenly realize that I've just seen someone I know walk past, and then I turn around and they're lost in a crowd and then I turn back around and someone else is in front of me.
Is that like, it's really, is it like the Matrix, like, just with the lady in the red dress? It's like that, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yes,
awesome.
Yes,
I think that's all of the news and events for this week. Thanks.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh a little bit. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. Or you can leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's all for episode 37. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing 3D printing and bring you some command line love.
So did our connections all hold up with the wind blowing?
No.
More or less.
Yeah.
I think we have more.
I apologise for speaking over all of you. I couldn't hear you.
Sorry, who said that?
No, I got that.
Nurse. Yes, we'll see you all next week. And there's not many weeks left till Christmas. Oh, crikey. Bye-bye.
No.
Bye.
Bye.
Windy Miller, anyone?